Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. John Pollock and Wei Ting here on the eve of Thursday in Canada.
The eve of Thursday? Okay, yes. All right. That's a weird way of describing Wednesday, but all right.
Well, it is Thanksgiving Eve in the U.S., and for us, it's just another Wednesday.
That it is. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, every day is a day to give thanks.
It can be, yes. I think everyone should always... you know, go to bed at night and have one thing you're grateful for from that previous day.
What are you grateful for today?
Today, I am very grateful for Audacity.
The editing software?
Yes.
I mean, why is that?
It's a wonderful service. It gets everything
free.
I'm very reliant on it. I find it to be very user-friendly.
Great, it's great. Yeah, no subscription fee.
It's wonderful. So it's is great. That okay? Yeah. I think on this particular day of November 27th, that's what I'm thankful for.
That's a great choice. All right.
This is where you say something much more heartfelt than me that you're thankful.
Okay. I'm grateful for, electricity. I mean, it would really suck if we lived in it. We wouldn't be doing this podcast, you know?
No,
I wouldn't have my smartphone that I spent.
Are you saying
if
we didn't have electricity, like you were out of electricity, or the world just had not reached that technology yet? Because that would be a very different circumstance we'd be living in.
I'm speaking about the discovery of electricity, or the usage, the harnessing of electricity for human prosperity.
Yeah, I wonder what we would be doing in that type of a time period.
Well, a lot of fire everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think we would start the show off like this, but here we are.
All right.
This is what you get on your holiday edition, folks, those that are celebrating.
We're a really weird wrestling podcast, I realize.
I think we've got our own unique corner of the market that is very distinctly ours. It's not very big, but we've got our corner, and we're happy with that corner. How are you otherwise?
Not bad. Yeah. Doing okay. I feel like I'm getting sick again. Maybe that I'm not so thankful for that, but you know, bound to happen.
I had to get my flu shot and everything the other day, and boy, it just threw me for a loop. I just did not sleep very well, and then today was just a mess with my head and such, but I have combated the flu, so I feel I'm okay.
Yeah. I don't think the flu will affect us to a certain degree. But it's not like we're going to take work off for it, because like we do work at home, right? So we never really have that much of an excuse to like we don't even have the good parts of being sick. You know what I mean?
I have never once in however many years this has been, I've never texted away and said, man, I'm just too sick to work today. I just feel that wouldn't be sufficient.
We just don't. I mean, for the rest of the time, I guess we should be thankful we don't have jobs that are so like physically demanding that require us to leave the house. But it also means when we do get sick, it's like we're still healthy enough to like watch wrestling and talk about it.
So. Yeah, that's there you have it for the hidden gems of our employment. All right. Well, on that note, folks, for more of this, Wayne and I will be back next week with a special edition of Talk. And,
oh, my God. Imagine an hour.
I think we just scared everyone off of it. A whole God show damn. Of this. Oh, my God.
Other people are like, I'm signing up right now. You know, but clearly plenty. Like, it's one of our most popular shows, truth be told. So clearly a lot of people.
Final Talk of the year we're going to have. I think you should come over or I come over. I think we should do it together.
I think it's written in the contract. It has to be in person.
It's an in-person show. Yeah. So that's coming out next week. And we will get into our upcoming shows. As always, it's a busy couple of days coming up. And we have Survivor Series this weekend as well. So we will be live after that. And before we get to Dynamite, let's get this out of the way first. It is Black Friday this week, and we are having a sale at chopped-tees.com from not only apparel extraordinaire himself, but newsbreaker Dickie Bird, who was the first one to notify me of the change in location for AEW's Grand Slam in Brisbane next year, of which he informed me that this was going to be very inconvenient. It's 30 minutes further than the original venue. And my response was, are you taking the horse out that night? And his response was, dickhead.
Okay. All right.
But tell us about this sale, Wei.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to go to the news story first or the plug, but I guess since you mentioned it, we should plug the sale going on right now at chop-tees.com, where they're having a Black Friday sale on everything, okay? This is crazy. I think like the change in venues has really messed with this guy's head, because he's put everything on sale, John. I'm talking 20% off of tees and tops, 20% off of hats like the one I'm wearing right now, 20% off of hoodies and sweatshirts.
Oh, my goodness.
When you buy two or more, I guess otherwise it's not as much of a sale, but it's still a really good sale. 50% off if you only buy one. If you buy two, it's 20% off. 20% off premium apparel, 15% off of accessories, and 15% off of baseball tees. And I can let you know that even our brand new post-wrestling jacket, because we have such limited quantities, Dickie has decided to put that on sale as well at 15% off. So,
a steal.
Just a steal. Just, you know, I think he's really just, maybe he's, you know, just, he's seeing, maybe he's concerned about the economy in Australia. Maybe that, you know, seeing these.
There's an incoming administration.
maybe it's the tariffs that have him concerned, but he's just slashing prices on everything. Sale goes till next week at the end of Wednesday. So yeah, please include us if you're doing some of your Black Friday shopping.
Yeah, support Chop Tees. I think their 2025 slogan will be no tariffs, ands, or buts. Shop at Chop Tees.
Oh goodness.
Okay. Yes, that sale is going on. Go support the post wrestling shop, and man, you can be styling like Wei in the winter with his hat, with his varsity jacket. You can just
why don't you try it on? You know, I could bring it over when we do.
I will. Just let me. You only have one, I believe. So I can't.
I'll share with you. We'll order you one, but I don't think we have your size. Actually.
Okay. It's like split custody, okay, of the jacket.
Sure. All right. Yeah.
We're going to head on over to the news, and we're going to start off with a very serious story, and that is coming out of the weekend. There was an amateur MMA event in Enoch, Alberta, which was it's a First Nation community. And the concept of this show is it was run by a group called Ultra MMA, which was under the banner of Ultra Events. And what they do is they take like regular everyday people and put them through various training camps for 8 weeks, where the training is free and you raise money for charity and you get a fight at the end of it. They do this in MMA and boxing. I think they even have a stand-up comedy as well that they do, but this was their MMA portion. So this one fighter, there were 18 fights that were going to be taking place on this card, all amateur fighters, many of whom would be fighting in probably their first fights. And sadly, there was a death coming out of this, a 33-year-old man by the name of Trokon Dosua. And he was involved in the second fight of the evening. And from those that were there, and myself and Jack Wannon, we did a bunch of reporting on this, and we do have a story up on the site. We did speak to an eyewitness that was right there and kind of gave us the description of what was happening. And he was looking very gassed during the fight. He weighed 202 pounds. They did same-day weigh-ins. His opponent was 193 pounds. What we don't know was the extent of the weight cut that he went through. That is certainly a question. But after this fighter won the fight by split decision, and video has surfaced online. You can actually see the contest and the aftermath. A lot of news outlets have shown him very wobbly, being helped out of the cage, and then he's taken to the back. The next fight began, and then the doctor during that fight was brought to the back, and the fight had to be paused, and then they took an early intermission before canceling all the rest of the fights a little later on. There is an investigation that is ongoing, and Ultra Events Canada did send us a statement. They first of all stated, their sympathies to the family and offering their support, and then stated the event at the Enoch Community Center was carried out under the auspices of the Central Combat Sports Commission. With investigations now underway into the cause of the participant's death, it would be inappropriate to comment further at this stage. And the RCMP, they did confirm to us that that they received a phone call on Monday morning in relation to a fighter reportedly passing away. So again, there is an investigation going on. CBC spoke to another one of the fighters and spoke about, you know, kind of what he had witnessed, and had actually trained with Dosua as well in the lead up to this. It's a very tragic story. The family has just launched a GoFundMe for funeral expenses and other, and he is survived by a wife and very sadly had two kids and was expecting a third child. So again, this man was 33 years old, and there's definitely a lot of criticism of what happened here, getting to the bottom of it, and somebody that was obviously a amateur fight, where this is like, it reminded me somewhat way of like those boxing events that used to happen in Toronto, where you would take these Bay Street professionals and they do training and then they'd fight at the end of it. Like, I don't know. I just have questions of certainly the weight cut, you wonder like how much weight did he cut? We don't know. And he did have to do a medical beforehand, but obviously all of these things are going to be looked into. It's just a very tragic story. And by my understanding, the first MMA related death to happen in Canada, although it follows not the first in Alberta, actually, because there was the Tim Haag death that also had happened in Alberta. And there had just been these measures that had been that had been under great scrutiny after he died in 2017. So you would have Tim Haag as well.
Very tragic, really sad. Having maybe been a part of the production of some of those boxing events that you described, where you just kind of take these everyday people. Essentially, these are like boot camps that motivate people that are just looking to get in shape, with the idea of having a charity boxing event at the end.
Like now, amateur fight, headgear, that kind of thing.
Yeah, this is an MMA version. And it calls into question whether or not these should be happening at all. I don't know if the problem is so much like the fact that people choose to do these things, or if it's more so the regulation and the people that are organizing the events, making sure that everybody is safe along the whole process. Certainly with the topic of weight cutting, making sure that that's being done safely, a lot of questions are being asked. And, because all the questions are being asked right now about what the regulation is right now, the sort of like detailing of the sanctions.
This was on native land as well, so mm-hmm. There was some oversight, but it wasn't under the same commission that would be overseeing fights in Edmonton, for instance.
Yeah, but really, really sad.
So we will move on, and we will get a link out there as well for the GoFundMe if you want to look that up. I mentioned it off the top, but AEW Grand Slam is moving from the Suncorp Stadium to the smaller Brisbane Entertainment Center. This is the February 15th show. Tony Khan had mentioned last week that they had sold, quote, thousands of tickets, but Fightful had reported that it was expected they would be downscaling the venue. It's still a venue that the capacity is listed at over 13,000, whatever they configure this to be. But certainly this would indicate this was not going to be an event that they would be able to, that did not warrant a 50,000 plus stadium level event for the level of demand that was there.
Do we know how much they've sold so far?
No, other than I would imagine it could certainly you're booking a venue that could house all of the people that have bought tickets so far. So I would imagine it would be in that range. So, yeah. I mean, it's kind of just, they're on ESPN Australia. But my understanding is it's not a big reach that they have in Australia, but it is one that As well, the question is, like, is this just going to air on Max? Like, you would think, like, there is the time zone difference that would that Tony Khan indicated last week would make it a little difficult to air as a pay-per-view with that change. But, yeah, this is coming up in just over 2 months. So, yes, the Brisbane Entertainment Center. And my understanding is Dickie Bird will still be attending at the new venue.
I think an interesting question would be to ask if maybe if this had this was announced, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, would the results have been different for AEW? You know, this is a card that's just entirely being sold off of the AEW name alone. The fact that it's an AEW debut in Australia, and clearly that's not enough for at least a stadium level show. You know, not any matches announced, not really sort of like any announcement of like who's going to appear, just assumptions of who's going to appear. But even if they did announce a card, even like, would that have been enough? Or is this just the current temperature of the product and the appetite for non-WWE pro wrestling right now?
Yeah, it's one of those questions. It's hard to answer, but you would think that, like, I go back to 2000, and when WCW was just in the doldrums here in their dying months, they went to Australia and they did tremendous on a tour there. And maybe some of that is just the residual effects of WCW's peak a few years ago. Yeah, I didn't know what to expect here, but when this was announced, like, you did have a lot of like fans in Australia that were kind of indicating like AEW is just not a very strong, it's just not a strong property yet in Brisbane specifically. I mean, that's an enormous country as well. It's not just you know, a fact of, you know, you can just, everything's within driving distance. Like, this is a massive country, and you know, there's people in Australia that might follow this, but it's like going to Toronto to Vancouver or something. Like, it's not exactly the same market.
Do you think this would make them hesitant to run stadium level shows in other parts of the world?
I think it might be a pause for future booking of stadiums, of knowing where the demand is. And the next one now with like Suncorp Stadium now being you're downsizing, the attention will be on the All-In show in Texas next year. And so what is like that, you have a lot more time to promote and make a big event, but you know, it's an ambitious undertaking for AEW in its current state to run a stadium anywhere at the moment. Yeah. We're going to stay on AEW because they're involved in this next story. Ricky Starks, who we talked about quite a bit this week. And I think we've talked about GCW on almost every show for the last week. And we are maybe this is their guerrilla marketing at its core.
I actually find that to be the most interesting angle. This might be the best thing that's ever happened to them. Well, we'll see if it reflects in ticket sales. That's
going to be the key. But I mean, nothing was really moving the needle. Like, they got to their 600 or so tickets, and then it's kind of stalled. And this week, like, they really have, this is on brand for GCW as like it's us against them. Like, it's the people versus GCW is the name of the show. And that's what we've kind of got.
It's just the them that is a very different them than the WWE. It's AEW.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So to bring everyone up to speed, Ricky Starks, he made his appearance at the show on Saturday, the Dream On event. And they were quick to announce him against Matt Cardona in a couple of weeks in LA. He was also going to do a show in Seattle and then be part of the Hammerstein Ballroom show. On Tuesday, GCW announced that Ricky Starks has been pulled. And through the reporting of Fightful, they have indicated that AEW made the call to pull him from GCW shows. He can still take other independent bookings, but it seems at the center of this issue with GCW are comments that Effie made on his podcast, Weekend at Effie's. And we played this on today's show with Pollock and Thurston, but I'm going to replay them just so people can hear the context of Effie's comments that are believed to have been the precursor to Ricky Starks being removed from these shows.
All have no buzz, no draw, and we've been riding the lightning on having to actually run a profitable company for the past few years to continue existing. We do not have as much backup. I'll put it this way. My company, I don't run a company. Our company, GCW can't run on a $40 million deficit and continue to run shows. But some of us have the privilege of being able to run at a $40 million deficit.
Brett doesn't own a football team?
Brett does not own a football team. Brett doesn't have a dad who pays him to stay away. I don't want this to be a personal thing. Like, I don't. But, hey, guys, you're not the only game in town. It's fine. I can't stop you from running venues. But in my line of work. When TNA Impact wanted to run center stage, GCW, a month before and a month after, were told we could not have those dates that we had secured before because it was competing with something they were doing. And now it just seems the game and the respect never goes both ways, and it's fine. We're not mad. Our people will be there. Our show will be great. We will show it out. But it isn't fun to see that, like, we're so out of ideas right now that the timing is that conspicuous to you showing up and doing that immediately after we announced that we're doing that.
So that was Effie with his comments about AEW, and of course AEW booking the Hammerstein Ballroom for 3 nights in December, this coming after GCW had announced their return to the venue in January. Says we're not mad. That's a little mad. What did you make of those comments? And do you think that that was enough that you could have seen a fire being stoked here, knowing that the AEW GCW relationship, if we can even call it that, not exactly has been to a lot of GCW people, like, it's not even a relationship. It's they deal with the guys, they get their clearance from AEW, and there's no communication between Tony Khan and Brett Lauderdale.
But the signing off of talents, yes, being allowed to wrestle at the promotion, I mean, it is about as much of a relationship as I think we've come to expect between, yeah, you know, AEW and their partners, right? So listen, this is a really interesting and fun to like talk about story for me, like, and I'm sure it is for a lot of people. Thus, it's catching a lot of headlines. I think it shows a number of things. You know, for one thing, Tony Khan is somebody who at this point has a lot of things online said about him. And I think he's at least shown a few times, you know, throughout this AEW run that he will push back. You know, he will either tweet back if there's something that he does not like, or in this case, if he is in charge of signing off on talents appearing on your show, he will take them away. He's not beyond making those sort of very public, you know, denouncing of, for instance, like comments like this types of moves. And I find fascinating alone, just even what it does maybe for an AEW image. What's coming out of this and what maybe the audience has kind of reacted to is also fascinating to me, because we talk about, you know, GCW perhaps like almost like, you know, being very willing to embrace this sort of like underdog, you know, story of them being bullied. But I also see a lot of people that just are not siding with GCW. And in fact, Effie said something that was stupid and out of line, and that GCW deserves to have, you know, their talent pulled if, you know, with comments like this. I don't, depending on where you fall, I mean, I can understand both perspectives, but it's a really interesting war of words. And while I initially thought GCW is going to totally run with this and this will like give them a lot of momentum, I'm not so sure. Like, there are certain people that I think are on AEW side and don't like these comments from Effie, for instance.
I can see, you know, the side of people that are going to be, you know, to hear a guy's honest thoughts. And I think everyone believes Effie's being very honest with his beliefs. But when you are also somewhat reliant on this company signing off on certain talents, when this happens and like the bear is poked, like you can't be too stunned and complain about it after the fact. And I mean, you could also state that, you know, with Brett Lauderdale, like he's the one that is essentially losing the talent here. This were not words out of his mouth. At the same time, like,
Effie's one of your top push stars, though, and like I don't think it's that big of a stretch to think that, you know, your top star, one of your top stars' podcasts is, like if Joey Janela, I don't know Joey Janela's like official relationship with AEW or not, but
no, he has no relationship anymore.
So he's AEW. Technically still also an independent contractor.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically all of them are.
But if Joey said something like this, I don't think you could use the independent contractor defense, right? Like there are people that are clearly associated with GCW, and I guess it's not crazy to think like Tony Khan would think that this would be the word. This also comes after Brett Lauderdale's comments on what he thought were, I guess you could consider, bullying tactics. But the other side of this whole thing is Ricky Starks and just how public he's been over recent weeks about his treatment mistreatment from AEW. The fact that he's now kind of become a pawn in this entire thing is just another side of this that makes things really interesting. And again, can reflect poorly either on AEW or Ricky Starks to some people.
So Brett Lauderdale on Tuesday night, he went on the Game Changer weekly show over at bodyslam.net. And this was Lauderdale addressing what's happened with Ricky Starks and also his reaction to Effie's comments.
I don't really know a lot. You know, I haven't heard about anybody else. And I don't, again, you know, I'm just hearing, you know, that Ricky has been pulled and period. You know, there's been AEW, you know, I haven't been on the phone with AEW where they've given me an explanation or, you know, ask me any questions or, you know, anything. There's been I have no communication with AEW over this. And, you know, I mean, what Effie says is Effie's opinion. And Effie is an independent wrestler. He's an independent contractor. He says this stuff on his own personal podcast, which is not endorsed or promoted or amplified or platformed by GCW. He's his own guy. He doesn't come to me and say, hey, on this podcast tonight, I'm going to talk about this, and this. Is that okay with you? You know, I don't review what he does. I have no control over Effie. He is absolutely independent, 100% through and through. He doesn't ask me, and he doesn't have to ask me.
All right, and that was Brett Lauderdale, and that's where they stand. Ricky Starks is off the shows. I think a lot of this also coincided with Ricky Starks doing this really long sit down with Chris Van Vliet the same day by coincidence that all of this broke. So naturally, you have Ricky Starks back in the midst of the online discussion and going back to like just the questions that Ricky Starks has as well. Like he has stated, I'm healthy. I'm ready to be back. He hasn't been used by AEW since March. His contract goes into 2025, and he's sort of in this holding pattern. And here he had these dates, which have been removed. And I don't think you're going to get AEW coming out with any kind of explanation or addressing this in any like substantive way either. I mean, I think they're just going to, even if Tony is asked, I think he'll give a very diplomatic answer. I don't think he's going to get into the weeds about this. I mean, up until this point, like he has not given any strong reason about why Ricky Starks has not been used. He has been asked about it. I mean, you can speculate and there's a discussion to be had. Like if Tony Khan has this guy under contract and he has the belief that once this deal is up, this guy's gone, do I invest those resources in him? And my two options are I could put him on TV and just job him out for months or have him as a bit player, but I could also just pay him and sit him. And that's like, he's not giving any clarification on why this is being happened. So it forces people to draw their own conclusions, but we do not know.
Yeah. All we can speak to is just what the public perception of all of this is. And I personally feel really bad for Ricky Starks. How could you not? You know, when if he's as I think, you know, forthright with maybe his experience with all of this as he claims, then we always feel bad for wrestlers that like are talented and are healthy and aren't allowed to work. I mean, Brody Lee went through the same thing before coming to AEW, and that's what kind of made AEW such a haven for that sort of like treatment of talents from the WWE. Now Tony and is becoming that guy. So I think like he takes a major PR hit from like these types of stories. And you know, as like, I mean, the argument would be that like Starks is going to potentially going to WWE and such, but I don't know. It's a bit of a tricky one, but also very fascinating to talk about.
And on that front, GCW, in light of all this news, they did make a bunch of announcements for their Hammerstein Ballroom show and really leaning into the ECW nostalgia that building tends to bring out with the additions of Tajiri, Masato Tanaka, Little Guido, who's just getting booked by everyone in 2024 and 25, Homicide, Super Crazy, and Maki Ito, without any ECW ties to her. But those are the additions. No opponents for any of these people yet. Maybe Maki Ito will challenge Josh Barnett.
I would love to watch that, actually. That would be oddly fascinating. Yeah.
Is this slowly building your interest for this Hammerstein Ballroom show? Is any of this? Is this?
It is. It is, yeah.
There is a story now. Like, I do feel there is something when a show becomes, like, The show is the story.
It feels real, like they have actually something to fight against, or at least like there's a topical sort of like context to it all beyond just the actual wrestling itself.
Well, whether it was like the original All In, like ECW shows, and I would say like GCW tries to cultivate from this, it's turning like these things into, this is more than just a match lineup. It's a cause for this fan base to support. And that's what they're trying to turn this show into. And we will see if they can make it feel like a, like this is a show that is of significance, of importance. And, you know, and taking this, like, this is right out of like the Young Bucks playbook of something thrown at you that you turn around and it's not making a shirt out of it. It's making an event out of it that drives your marketing of the show. And GCW certainly, as you can see from the promo for the show, like lean into that type of marketing.
Again, what's so fascinating about all of this is that the sort of playbook that built AEW is now potentially being adopted by something else against AEW. AEW now are in the position of the sort of like, I don't know, dominant brand, and GCW are the challengers. I mean, to a much smaller scale than I think, you know, the AEW-WWE relationship is, but it's still very fascinating. Do you think there's any side of Tony Khan that might entertain the idea of working with this, with GCW, to build into an angle?
I just think that if My gut would say
both companies need a shot in the arm right now. Is would this be a big enough thing?
You don't rule anything out with time. If like an AEW saw like a value to this, I just feel it's like it feels as though you're trying to do your own like little invasion with the Death Riders at this point. It's and I just think like I really don't think like Tony holds GCW in like the highest regard. And I think that's been pretty evident over the years that I just, I'd be very surprised.
Wouldn't that be perfect?
Yeah. Listen, it's something that you can never totally rule out.
Yeah, there's fantasy booking right now.
Well, I don't know if we'll get a Brett Lauderdale storming rampage. Coming up December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, two editions of Rewind Away coming your way, including Dave Bautista starting in the M. Night Shyamalan horror film Knock at the Cabin. Plus, we will review Noah's Departure Card from 2004 featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Plus, reviews of ROH Final Battle, Strong Style Evolved, and the granddaddy of them all, the best and worst of show for 2024 with Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and yours truly. PostWrestlingCafe.com. John Cena is advertised for Elimination Chamber March 1st in Toronto, and they are promoting February 1st, John Cena's final Royal Rumble. This is the last time John Cena will go to Toronto. Like, he's okay. Not even going to travel here after his career. He's
done. The movie is shooting here in Toronto, none. John Cena will not be there. I'm going to hold him to that.
He'll do Zoom press calls. He's never going to TIFF. None of those things. Okay. His last time ever in Toronto. That's it. That's the way you market this thing. So, yeah, forget the Eras tour. We're getting the end of an era here with John Cena in March.
Need to see vignettes of Cena like doing the most touristy Toronto things for the very last time. Go up to the CN Tower, do the Edge Walk. I guess travel to Niagara Falls, since it's close enough that they considered Toronto geography. I don't know. Go. What else is there to do here?
That's about it.
Take a dip in the Don River. Like, rent a bike.
Man, tourism board over here. Wei Ting. Maybe you can come rake your leaves.
I did that today. Yeah.
Oh, okay. The Young Bucks are set for January 5th. They're going to challenge for the IWGP tag titles. They're currently held by Hanare and Great Okan, but we do have the World Tag League going on, so presumably the winners of that will have the title match on January 4th, and then the winners will take on the Young Bucks. So they filmed this vignette that aired on the World Tag League show the other day, including Nick just doing a like full-on like moonsault into their pool with his suit on.
Well, how else are you going to, end a short form video, all right?
It's a lot of effort to put into just this random announcement for January 5th, but I guess it was worth it for the Young Bucks. So that's it. That's the match you're getting, them challenging for the tag titles. Does it do it for you?
Well, it depends who the champions are, right? If it's Hanare and Great Okan, I can't really say that would do it for me. If it's a maybe more interesting team.
Do you see an... Because originally people were thinking like this tease of like Omega and Tanahashi against the Young Bucks, where you can go. Having them all on the same show, could you see some kind of angle with the Bucks and Omega?
Certainly. Yes. Yes, of course.
They'll just shake hands and say, let's go back to AEW as friends, because that whole attack last year, we were stressed at work.
They just write out
that whole feud to come back as baby faces to challenge the Death Riders.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think it's interesting to see how much from Wrestle Dynasty will be built up to on AEW television, and how much of it will be recapped and treated as like, you know, canonical material for AEW television.
I think it's going to be mentions on TV, but I don't know how much push you're going to get when
World's End is
the week before. Even like Fight for the Fallen on that Wednesday, that's their first simulcast with Max. Like I see those shows getting all the big publicity. They'll mention the matches, like they've got the Women's Cup, and they've got
recaps. You know, yeah. I'm sure they'll do something that'll be related to storylines. But yeah, how will this actually feel? Well, it's not a co-promoted show. It's AEW lending talent, essentially, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is multiple promotions all. Mm-hmm. Coming together on that 5th. And then Raw on Monday night up against the Chargers and Ravens game did 1,510,000 viewers and a 0.47 in the demo. Almost identical viewership, down 4% in the demo. Slightly higher watched football game than last week. But they were first in primetime on cable for everything except for the NFL. And in Canada, they were up 8% in viewership, 161,000 viewers and 67,400 in the 25 to 54 demo. So there you have it. You are now all up to date on ratings info. And the next thing to get yourself caught up on is TNA 2009, because on Thursday, Rewind Away returns to your life with Turning Point 2009, the countdown to Hulk Hogan, as the company is pretty much in a lame duck period for 2 months before Hogan arrives. So what they did was just book like these kick-ass shows with the top matches on this card being the rematch, one of the most famous matches in TNA history, Samoa Joe, Daniels, and TNA heavyweight champion AJ Styles, plus Desmond Wolfe versus Kurt Angle. And if you think Nigel McGuinness is great on commentary, give this man the name Desmond Wolfe to do heel promos with puns, and look out Duran Duran, because here comes Desmond Wolfe. The highlight. He is the best on this show. But that is what Way and I are going to be reviewing. This, if you happen to want to cram this event, it is free on the TNA YouTube channel. If you want to check it out, might suggest an ad blocker, but yes. Way is going to be doing that. Have you started the show?
I have started, and I got the reference.
Okay. So you're that far.
What is the line?
And I'm hungry like a wolf. Kurt Angle.
Amazing. Amazing. Absolutely.
All right. That's coming up Thursday. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days access. And man, December would, it would test positive. Okay. Whether, we turned in our test now, or years later they came back and checked the test, they would strip us of the medal instantly with this lineup. Not only are you getting Rewind Aways covering Dave Bautista's entry. Is this his first horror film that we're aware of? Knock at the Cabin.
I mean, horror food. I don't know, but I would argue it's probably his most well-known horror movie. Knock at the Cabin. Somebody chose it, and we will talk about whether or not this was Dave Bautista's best acting performance to date. This comes very close to the release of The Last Showgirl, which many people are buzzing about Bautista's performance in. So maybe we'll watch this, and then we'll watch The Last Showgirl at some point and compare Dave Bautista performances.
And then we'll also be reviewing Noah's Departure card, their first Tokyo Dome event in July of 2004, featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. We are going to have, as we mentioned, an edition of Talk,
final battle review, and the best and worst of show will be on the Post Wrestling Cafe at the end of December as Braden and Davey join us to go through all the best and the worst that the year had to offer us. $6 a month, postwrestlingcafe.com, and do your that special someone a solid by getting them the gift that keeps on delivering. That is the Post Wrestling Cafe, now available postwrestling.com/gift, and be the most popular person in your Secret Santa group.
Yeah, those of you that might be listening to this podcast right now, sitting in the car with maybe your annoying spouse who plays this every morning on your commute to work, maybe you now know, have another idea for what you might get them for this Christmas.
Well, if you were in Chicago, Illinois on Wednesday night, maybe you got your significant other tickets to the Wintrust Arena for Dynamite, where the last number, just under 4,000. And this is one worth comparing, because every year Dynamite runs in the same building on the eve of Thanksgiving. So this is a pretty good comparison. Last year in the arena, they did 5,066. 2022, they did 6,100 tickets distributed. So, you know, kind of a decrease of 1,000 each year. As we go into tonight's show, which was a Dynamite and Collision taping, and kicking things off, I imagine the final airing of November Rain, recapping Full Gear, and then we are into the Continental Classic as they tease changes to this year's format, which I don't know if they ever mentioned any changes to the format. Did we?
Well, they mentioned the updated rules. I'm not exactly sure what the old rules were that were different, though.
I mean, they said it's a 20-minute time limit, 3 points for a win, 1 for a draw, and everyone is banned from ringside. I don't recall any.
Is it in the semifinals? Because last year, was it gold winner faces blue runner-up and blue faces
gold? It's the same this year, they explained.
Well, what was it last year is what I'm asking.
I thought it was the same last year. I mean, yeah. All right.
I don't know.
If that's the format change, then there, we're covered. The Hurt Syndicate come out. They might have been the biggest baby faces here at the beginning. Everyone is chanting for MVP, who compares Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin to Chicago superstars Walter Payton and Michael Jordan. And he says that his business card is the golden ticket to change your life unless you're Swerve. Lashley is the most dangerous man in AEW, the walking Armageddon. We are here to take titles and leverage them for more money and more power. We are the merchants of misery and in the business of pain. We hurt people. An amazing babyface promo here from MVP, which I am almost convinced they are leaning towards at this point. But MVP is excellent in this role.
He's so fantastic. Underutilized during his latest years in the WWE, underutilized in his role with Omos, that unfortunately just, you know, the talking was great, but I don't know if the wrestling necessarily followed up there.
Well, why all this focus on Ricky Starks when there's no concern about Omos? I mean, this guy's in the prime of his years.
Omos
wants to work
at GCW. I think would be,
dude,
fantastic.
They would take Omos over John Cena in GCW, I think.
I don't know about that.
Oh, I do.
Well, maybe at some point we can get that wonderful fantasy booking. So, by the way, Cino mentions last year was just the finals at World's End. This year, the finals and the semifinals take place at World's End. So that could be the change. Brian also says that they didn't do Winter League semifinals last year, so maybe that was also one of the changes too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, landmark changes to brace ourselves for. Shelton Benjamin and Mark Briscoe kicks off the tournament in the Blue League. So we get Briscoe, first off, with a stare down with Bobby Lashley on the way to the ring. They do go over the history between the Briscoes and Benjamin and Haas in Ring of Honor. And Benjamin suplexes him on the floor and then goes to the top, tossing him off the top. And Briscoe comes out of the corner. He's bobbing and weaving and landing strikes, hits the Froggy Bow, but his rib is hurt, so he can't go for the cover. And then Benjamin rolls to the floor. Briscoe hits the Cactus Elbow Drop, and then Benjamin hits these high-angle Germans, and Benjamin hits the running knee into the corner, hits the super kick, and finishes him with pay dirt in 11 minutes and 44 seconds, picking up the first 3 points in the Gold League.
It was a good match. Yeah. I wouldn't say necessarily as impressive as some of Shelton's other performances that we've seen him in AEW thus far, but I think still good enough to feel like this is a new, more serious, at least more seriously pushed Shelton Benjamin by giving him a win here. First of all, like him entering the Continental Classic period suggests that the company sees something in him and wants to push him. And not only that, but they gave him a big win. So good for the Hurt Syndicate, good for Shelton. And, I thought Briscoe was very charismatic in a losing effort. I hope he is booked stronger this year than the last, where I believe he only had one win.
Yeah, it was a nice match, I thought, overall. I thought that I feel like a broken record every week, but I just thought like the heat, it got worse as the show went on, I would say, especially in like the middle of the show. Crowd was still rather fresh for this match. I didn't feel it suffered as much. Shivani brings out Mercedes Moné with Camille, and this is what we've all been waiting for. Way she puts over Chris Statlander, giving her one of the toughest matches of her career. And Chris is one of the best, but I am the greatest TBS champion of all time. Unlike you, Camille, who can't get anything right. Shut up. Are you stupid or just dumb? You can't fire me because I quit. And Mercedes freaks out over this news. This was dreadful. I so don't want to see anything involving these two. I think this is just from the car crash on. Really, it was that match on TV. That was the turning point, I think, for many on Camille. But it's just like everything has just turned on this. I think they just need to go their separate ways. Let's never be in the same shot again. We don't need a match. We don't need anything. Let's have Camille just rehab her arm, and she comes back, and new name, new identity, everything.
She should come back as who? Isn't she playing like what, Mildred Burke or something? Like, who's she playing? Like,
she should come back as June Byers. She June should Byers. Come back as anyone but Camille. That would be it. I mean, this.
I don't know if it's gonna help. And shit, like the acting was so bad like really throughout this entire thing. But like especially in this segment where like I feel like in a few like we had a bit more emotional range than we usually do. But the lines were bad. The acting was bad. But they did have like a pretty supportive crowd, I felt, which like that reacted well to like the Camille sort of like telling Mercedes to shut up. So ultimately I think it kind of came across fine, but man the performances have just been bad. I was excited about this pairing. You know, I thought these two would somehow enhance each other. It's just not there. The acting ability, at least, just not
like
there.
Like having the bodyguard role, who's constantly demeaned by the star of the act, and it's just building and building, and the crowd just waiting for the person to stand up to them. Like, that is such a tried and true story that can work so effectively. And I just felt, and granted, I mean, the crowd just did react.
Luchasaurus, Wardlow, you know, like,
oh, and you can you go, name it. You can go Kane. Back. It's like if you have the patience for it and it builds, the crowd is just your crowd is waiting for it. And this one to me was just, I mean, I don't know. It's
but let's be honest, like the crowd weren't connecting with Camille in this, even with this.
No,
sort of like,
no, none of this sympathetic is role, none of right? this is going great.
Yeah, so I'm curious to know what the next move is. I mean, this is all kind of happening a lot quicker than I expected. I even thought like just this final push towards the breakup would be a little bit more prolonged. But where do they go with this? Could this be a swerve? And they just, you know, get back together, like beat up Chris Statlander, and then just show everybody that it was all a ruse. I'm actually thinking it might even more be that.
So this is all to fool Chris Statlander, who is going to take Camille under her wing and then be.
Yes, perhaps. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That'll do wonders for her as a babyface. That will be a great idea.
Statlander, you mean?
Yeah.
It could work.
This
could
woman work. Who tried to run you over with a car. I'll give you a second chance. Sure. I don't even want to give this any more analysis. It's just not necessary. Okay. They did put a lot of focus on a big boom AJ and big Justice, which I mean, this got a lot of attention coming in. I think more coming out than even going in.
Yeah,
like this totally. Got them a lot of attention. And then it was time for Jericho and Tomohiro Ishii number two. 2 years after their first contest in the same building. Jericho is out in a cowboy hat while Brian Keith was accompanied by Mitch. And Big Cass joins them on commentary, which felt like him and Nigel just trying to outwit one another and come up with the most ridiculous dialogue together. And we just rewind to their last match as they start with the back and forth chops. And they just continue and continue these chops until each executes a German. After a DDT on the apron, Jericho is bleeding from the mouth. And Cass notes how Jericho's jaw, it's like Marvin Hagler's. And after the chops, they start going to slaps. And Ishii starts overwhelming him. Cass notes this fight is one that Paul and Tyson can only dream of. And from these slaps, you can see Ishii's cheek. It has a mixture of Jericho's blood, and it's just flush from the slaps. Like, it looks so red as he is continually slapped. And, I mean, they were really, they were doing a very intense match. It was a total callback to their last match. And Jericho's, like, trying to rile up the crowd and get them going. Jericho tries for the Judas effect and it gets stopped. He lands a lion salt and then stuns Ishii with a Judas effect, follows with a code breaker, and then Ishii kicks out at one. And that did get the crowd into things. But then they settle back in. Ishii stops a walls and then Ishii hits his own code breaker. His nose is busted and then hits a lariat, gets the two count. And as Ishii comes off the ropes, he's caught with a Judas effect and Jericho hits a follow up one to pin him in 13 minutes and 15 seconds. This was what I think on its own. I thought that they tried to live up to their match from 2 years ago. I just felt like for a lot of this, it's like they were just killing each other with like these real strikes, and the crowd, I won't say the crowd was dead, but it was not a crowd that was like losing their minds for this intense battle that they were trying to conjure, which was the case that you got 2 years ago when the crowd was just losing their mind for this match of these guys in the nonstop chop battle. So I just thought in that regard, that took this down a few notches.
I can understand that. I think there's still very much a lot of anti-Jericho sentiment that exists right now, and they at least I think probably had something like that to fight against. But I thought they got over that hump, and I thought, like, when I'm just watching the wrestling match, I thought they delivered an excellent wrestling match. I was entertained, and I think from my memory of their last one, I might have preferred this one even, but they were just maybe battling against a bigger deficit, maybe a Jericho that's not as hot as he was last time around. But what kind of surprised me was how damaged Ishii looked. Like, I've seen Tomohiro Ishii in a lot of matches, man. I've never seen him look this beat up, you know, with the blood and like a purple cheek at this point by now. These two work their asses off, you know, and you don't see that type of match every single day on television. Certainly you don't always see it from, what is he, 50 years old now? How old is Chris Jericho? 50 something?
Jericho's over 50 at this
point. Oh my God. Like, I mean, to wrestle that style of match, he worked his ass off, man. And people clearly, I think, are hesitant to cheer for Chris Jericho or even in a setting like this. But he, I think, deserved a lot of the praise here.
Yes. A combined age of 102.
102. Okay.
Jericho, 54.
Wow. They're both 50 doing this.
I mean, dude, they both work incredibly hard. And like, Ishii's got to rest up for he needs to go out and have this blowaway match with Shingo Takagi on January 4th because everyone's leaning on that match to kind of be the show stealer that night. Renee is with Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana and is asked, how do you rebuild from this loss to Bobby Lashley? And he says, I do rebuilding very well. I'm going to figure it out, but I've never been hit so hard before. And then Max Caster walks by laughing. And Swerve calls back Max. And Caster says, wait a minute. You lost at the Prudential Center. Didn't I beat you at the Prudential Center? And Swerve is pissed at this. And leads to a fight between these two. And Swerve leaves Max Caster laying on the ground.
I had no desire to see this match by the end of this segment. None.
I mean, it plays to, you know, Kassler's current semi-heel status as part of a potentially a move to the Hurt Syndicate. And I think more importantly, probably leads to Swerve actually getting a win after losing several matches recently.
Yeah, I guess that's what it led to.
But yeah, we'll probably further turn Caster to the dark side.
Shivani brought out Hangman Page as we were going to explain all of it. We were going to dissect all of the final 10 minutes of this pay-per-view. He states, first of all, they state that Orange Cassidy is dealing with internal trauma from the injuries in the match with Moxley and from that chemical substance poured down his throat. I would imagine that would be the more pressing issue at the moment. Yeah, he was also poisoned.
We've had asphyxiation multiple times. We had a poisoning. What kind of trick do the Death Riders have next?
Well, Shivani points out how you lost to Jay White, then you attacked Christopher Daniels, then you took out Wheeler Yuta, and then you helped Christian Cage. Yes, you had a lot going on Sunday or Saturday. Page explains that if Daniels steps up to him again, he'll knock him down to the point he won't get up again. He said he made a deal at Full Gear, and if he kept up his end, he would be going home as champion for Thanksgiving. So the idea is help Christian win the title. He gets the title shot, presumably tonight, and he would have won the title. But Cage, you failed. And my intention has always been to be AEW champion, and it never should have been Swerve's title, Bryan's, or Moxley's. It's always been my title. So Jay White comes out and he reminds him about the last pay-per-views and said, I beat you at WrestleDream and I beat you on Saturday. I deserve the title shot, which is unequivocally accurate. He says, I will happily face you again tonight, but before they can get into challenges answered, Pac attacks Jay White while Yuta chop blocks Page from behind. White ends up returning, sending both out of the ring. Page lays out White, and then Marina Shafir appears, hitting Hangman with the briefcase, swings at White, and then White ducks, and they tease Jay White, giving the Blade Runner. But before he can, Moxley is in for the save, applying the choke, and then Shafir nails him with a low blow, and we get the Dynamite debut of Mother's Milk. And Jay White, we never got an update. I'm presuming he perished from this move.
I think he's doing worse than Orange Cassidy with the mysterious chemicals right now.
What a shot this was.
I love this. I mean, she's been using it on like Ring of Honor. I saw it recently at Bloodsport. I love the name of this move.
They should have aired B-roll of Marina Shafir's win from the Game Changer show to educate everyone
should.
And put a courtesy at the bottom.
Yeah, thank Game you, Changer Brett Wrestling. Lauderdale, yes. For this clip. I think this move is awesome for people who, I guess, haven't seen Dynamite and are just listening. It's essentially like sort of like an inverted rear naked choke. It looks brutal. It's got a great name. Mother's Milk, which Excalibur did not use on the show.
No, they didn't give it a name.
Yeah. So, I thought the segment was far better paced than what we got on Saturday. I mean, certainly it helps that we know what they're talking about, but this was a great explainer of maybe that very chaotic 5 minutes that we saw on Saturday night.
What do you see being the title program that comes from this? Like, certainly it feels like Moxley and Jay White. The only question is if Hangman is involved in this, and do you feel Moxley and Jay White, is that strong enough for a pay-per-view main event?
The Australia show, yes.
For Australia? Oh, okay.
Yeah. New Zealand, you know, like I could see it, you know, a babyface challenging, a Jay White challenging John Moxley.
I think this is coming, this is World's End.
I could see three-way.
I could too. You need to make sense of Hangman being able to be inserted into this match. Like, why would Jay have beaten him in these two matches?
They don't have to make sense of that. Records don't really matter anymore, John.
I guess not.
It's just like, hey, you pissed me off. I'm going to challenge you. And I think it's for the best. We don't need such convoluted storyline. They all hate each other. That's all they need. This also brings Jay White and Hangman Page into this Death Riders takeover storyline, and it's allowing the Death Riders takeover feel a lot more. I would say complete by having him now take out two top guys, or at least, you know, near the top guys in AEW.
Then we had a Dodge Ram ad with the Death Riders promoting World's End, where they drove out into the desert and with flares.
Yeah, I thought the show was in, isn't it in
Orlando, which is known for its desert terrain.
Well, they're on their way, I guess. They're taking the long way through the desert to Orlando.
Okay, I think they're going in the wrong direction. That would be my thought. Death Riders need a GPS for Christmas. This is quite the ad. If they didn't have the name of the pay-per-view at the end, I wouldn't know what the hell they would have been promoting here.
A truck.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Claudio Castagnoli and Ricochet in the Gold League. Excalibur brings up their match in Bola 14 years ago that Claudio won. And so this match was bizarre. Claudio drops him on the barricade, and the match is going along fine. And then all of a sudden, these 4,000 fans realized, hey, they're both bald. And this became the source of all of their chants. They chanted, these guys are bald. Baldy shit. Bald is awesome.
Let's go baldy. Baldy sucks. Bald forever.
Ricochet at one point like rubs his head to acknowledge it, and the crowd goes nuts. Claudio looked genuinely pissed, I think, throughout most of this.
He's staying in character too. Like a death
it's kind of the demeanor he
way.
Is to project, but it was also a case of like this was not necessarily enhancing things here. I felt this joke ran its course about 30 seconds in and just continued and continued.
So I thought it actually spoke to perhaps how, I don't know, unspecial this match probably felt to the crowd. And that's disappointing to me, because on paper, Ricochet versus Claudio for the first time in 5 years and outside of the WWE feels like a big deal to me. Clearly this crowd,
this was the match on paper I was most interested in today.
If it was a Will Ospreay in this match, I don't think they'd be, he has hair. But if it was a bald Will Ospreay in this match,
Kyle Fletcher better worry about his matches.
I just don't think like they essentially hijacked this by
they really did. Cause I think this became more the focus and the match.
And what does that tell you about the excitement for Ricochet in AEW?
I think there's
Claudio.
Like this felt like an audience that was just kind of like checked out and were going to engage in themselves. And I can't give you like a breakdown of what this crowd was thinking, but obviously like it just felt like they were not all that enamored with the match. And like, I didn't have too much negative to say about the match, but like a lot of these Ricochet matches, I think everyone is expecting this to be this guy that's going to come in here and just be blowing everything out of the water. And as I've said, like it's a high bar that I think Ricochet is expected to be meeting. And whether that's fair or unfair, it does feel as though like he's trying to be a Ricochet that is like 8 years older now than the Ricochet a lot of people were seeing on the independents.
Yeah. Ricochet, certainly at that time in the indies, felt very special. Even in NXT, he felt incredibly special. In the WWE, he was starting to feel less and less and less special every single week. And that might have worked its way to this point, where even arriving in AEW, people aren't necessarily remembering the Ricochet from, you know, PWG. They're perhaps seeing WWE mid-carder. There's also the issue of just the style catching up so much that Ricochet now kind of feels like he's wrestling like everybody else and not that much more special than, you know, Commander, for instance.
So Ricochet did his comeback. There was this awkward tope suicida where it felt as though whether Ricochet was like adjusting mid-move or Claudio was like at a different spot, I don't know what happened, but you could see like his knee buckles as he's running and then just crashes on top of Claudio and they just tumble on the floor. But they got up, they just continued. Claudio hit, Ricochet was pressed in the air, stood on his shoulders and turned it into a tilt-a-whirl and followed up with a Fosbury flop, which looked great. There's a double stomp by Claudio, applies the sharpshooter into a crossface, and then he takes Ricochet, crotches him on the barricade, and Ricochet is battling to beat the count, gets into the ring and gets hit by a clothesline, and Claudio pins him in 13 minutes. And I understand, like, in this round robin tournament, you want all the math to make sense and stuff. Guys have to lose and things, but on a larger front, it really does feel like Ricochet. He feels like a guy in AEW at this point. I don't know if he's necessarily come in and, yeah, depending on what your expectation level was. And I think part of that was just this crowd reaction as well, to your point. Like, I think there are other match pairings you would not have seen this type of reaction. This was just a really weird match. And I didn't think the work was bad. Like, they had, like, a very nice wrestling match. But this was more the crowd kind of took this one over with all the stuff throughout most of it.
Yeah. I mean, looking at Gold League, I expect... I could see Ricochet making it, you know, in the top two. And from that point on, maybe even having a chance to make it to the finals, maybe even winning the whole thing. Who knows, right? But
he should have some, like, he's got the opponents to have, like, just an incredible tournament here.
But I expect him to get to be booked, like, relatively strong. You know, like, he's an investment from Tony, and I think Tony would want to use this tournament to make him feel shiny. But they're kind of starting from a place where the audience isn't necessarily feeling that way about Ricochet. And it's going to take some form of reinvention, whether it be, like, some advancement in in-ring style, which I think at this point is an even higher bar than we could even imagine, or maybe as a character or in terms of storyline that'll really kind of, like, give him that extra boost.
They showed highlights of Fletcher and Ospreay from Saturday, and then Renee interviews Don Callis and Kyle Fletcher, who they state how much better they are than Will Ospreay, and Fletcher says he is better, and the Continental Classic is just another way to prove it. Adam Cole comes out with Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, and they explain Roderick Strong is recovering after the match. Adam Cole is sick of playing this game. MJF needs to be a man and fight him, but I know you won't because you're a little bitch. And Adam Cole swears on his mother that he will beat MJF within an inch of his life. This prompts Kyle O'Reilly to come out. Says, you fought MJF and it didn't get the job done. Let me fight Max. Cole cuts him off. He said, what you said really left a mark on me. I don't want my friends fighting my battles. I need to handle MJF. Kyle explains, I'm not doing this for you, Adam. I'm doing it for Roddy. And then we hear the piano being played on the screen, and we go to the latest MJF Chronicle from home. He's playing the piano and explains he is not interested in wrestling either of these men, but the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal is next week, and then goes back to playing. And that was it. Well-timed involvement here. And Adam Cole declares himself for the Battle Royal next week, as does Kyle O'Reilly. So they will be in the Battle Royal, and they never stated that MJF would be in this Battle Royal. You were kind of just left to assume he would be.
Wasn't last year, like, the winner of the Battle Royal gets the match?
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right. The winner gets to face him for the ring.
Yeah.
That's how the format is.
Which is what Cole and Kyle are kind of competing for.
Right, so right. If either wins, they get the match with MJF, which would probably be a TV match then that they would do.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't think, well, they could save it for World's End.
They could. They do have that Winter is Coming show coming in 2 weeks as well. And that could be the place you put it.
Yeah. Again, like, we've been talking about Cole and even MJF for the past month, where I don't know if this storyline feels all that hot right now. But I do think I do like Kyle being in this. You know, it's a more serious role for Kyle than just sort of being the background guy reacting to Mark Briscoe's promos in the conglomeration.
Like Matt Taven here. That was his whole role here. Just react, be surprised. You don't talk. You're not even going to be referenced by commentary.
Matt Taven's time is coming. He's just waiting patiently here. But they are putting further obstacles between this Adam Cole and MJF match, this time in the form of this Dynamite Diamond Ring. So do you think they'll do Kyle versus MJF first and then Cole, or how do you think
I think we're going to drag this out till next year's World's End. That's my thought.
Until he's done this damn movie.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, this Happy Gilmore better be great. Mm-hmm. Jamie Hayter against Queen Aminata. So this is the tournament to figure out the AEW women's representative for the cup match on January 5th. So Serena Deeb and Willow Nightingale will have a match on the December 7th Collision, and then the two winners will face off at Winter is Coming on December 14th, the Collision edition of Winter is Coming. So they start off with these big chops that they are exchanging. Hayter is in control. They trade some elbows, and then Hayter is just leaning against the rope and gets hit with a kind of like a running PK, and she hits the Uranagi backbreaker coming back, kicks out the knee, and then tries these multiple crucifix covers. They were just all over the place here. And then goes to this running boot, and felt like Queen Aminata was like barely kicking out of this thing. Crowd didn't know what to make of it. And then Jamie Hayter just hits her with the Haterade and keeps her down in 9 minutes and 18 seconds. I heard multiple pins dropping during this match. I don't know about you. That's how loud this was.
Yeah, crowd was pretty cool for it. And I think it speaks to what they've done with Jamie Hayter up until this point, which isn't a whole lot since her return. Certainly it's not the type of reaction you would have expected maybe before her injury. But I did think Queen Aminata looked really good. You know, every time I see her in a prominent match, I think she does really well. Very fluid, technically strong, good confidence here. So I'm kind of excited to more excited to see her get a strong push. But they are building to Julia Hart versus Jamie Hayter, of course.
Well, that's what we think, because the lights go out and we get a spotlight on the stage, and Excalibur, our fearless detective. Perhaps some mind games from Julia Hart.
Perhaps, yeah.
Would this freak you out? If you knew who was doing this and the lights went out in an arena and a spotlight was placed, would this really mess with you?
Let's say we're doing a podcast right now. The lights in my room go out, John, all right? Like, what if this happened? I'm just like...
Whoa. Yeah. The mind games have begun. Where are you?
It'd probably freak you out, wouldn't it?
You know what? It's a fear of living without electricity.
It all ties back. Yeah, full circle.
Renee did her sit down with Mina Shirakawa, and she says she knew that this day would come with Mariah May, because if she could do that to Toni Storm, she could do it to me too. This is the real Mariah May, who is selfish and will kill anyone that gets close to her. Well, I'm going to introduce her to the real Mina Shirakawa. And with that, she got met with a real champagne bottle to the back of the head and beats her with the championship belt. This was more pronounced with like the white backdrop here. And Mariah May proclaims, "I want Mina." And this is announced for December 14th. Winter is coming.
Which 2 weeks is, from now. Yeah.
Not December 14th. This is earlier in the week. There's two versions of Winter is Coming. Winter is Coming twice that week.
Dynamite and then Collision.
This is the Dynamite version. And then they're doing a Saturday one too. So yes. They set this up. I mean, it was kind of, she didn't get to hit her with the bottle on Saturday, so she hit her here.
Shirakawa was standing tall on Saturday, and May gets her chance.
Did you see that lump on her head from the angle on Saturday?
No, I didn't.
She posted this online. She had a giant, pretty big hematoma on her forehead from, remember when she spears her off the stage and they hit that before the table, they hit something else, and I'm pretty sure that's where it was on the tackle spot.
You talk about Mina or Mariah May?
Mina.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay. Anyway.
I'm not. Damn. Well, so this was a pre-tape. They're getting to the match already in 2 weeks. It all feels really rushed to me. Like, again, I thought that we'd have maybe a little bit more of them teaming together before getting to the building to the actual match. I mean, but again, we have to remember, like, we don't exactly know what Mina Shirakawa's availability is. These sort of like spotty appearances are maybe like the best we can expect.
What if they play off of the Toni Storm? She's lost in all these territories. She's thinking of walking away from wrestling, and to add to this burden on her career, they had to downscale the stadium in Australia where everyone expected Toni Storm to carry this event. And her back is against the wall. She has to come out and prove that she is not just a champion. She's also a draw.
I don't think you'll hear any acknowledgement of that downscaling on TV. No.
A good angle here with Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa. So announced for Collision on Saturday, which again is being taped tonight, and this is the 4 p.m. to when does this air? 4 till 7. It's the Collision Rampage back-to-back airings. Hangman Page against Wheeler Yuta. And then in tournament matches, Kazuchika Okada and Daniel Garcia in the Blue League. Kyle Fletcher and Beast Mortos in a Blue League match. And Will Ospreay against Juice Robinson in the Gold League.
So is Rampage being taped tonight too?
I think they taped most of Rampage last week. They might have been taping a little bit of it this week, or they taped all of it last week. I don't think they did all of it tonight.
Okay. Interesting.
And then next week's Dynamite has the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal, Pac against Jay White, and Brody King against Claudio in the Gold League. Main event, Brody King, Darby Allin. And Darby comes out, and man, they showed extra footage of his attack in the car. This guy looked like he was in near death after this car stunt.
Yeah. Yeah, when reports came out that he was actually the guy driving the car, I wasn't really shocked.
How shocked were you?
I was not shocked at all, because I guess who else would you get to do this? You know, why hire a stuntman when you kind of have a stuntman on your roster right now? The guy who's actually supposed to be doing it. I bet he fought to do that. So, yeah, interesting dude.
Real drivers.
Jeez.
So Allin comes out, his ribs and leg are taped up, and the story, which may not be too far of a story, is that the guy is basically clinging to health and gets decimated by Brody King for the first three quarters of this match. They did shake hands at the beginning, and then King just mauls him. They do a running cannonball spot, Brody does, on the floor, and briefly the video goes out, and we lose audio for about 2 minutes, so we have no commentary, and the match is just going on. And finally,
most of this was in commercial, was it not?
It might have been. I don't know.
On Triller, we got to see everything. So, but yeah, they did. It sounds like they did come back without audio, at least.
So they do regain the audio right as Darby hits a code red off the turnbuckle, and at this point, the crowd is getting into things, and Darby hits a somersault dive and a pair of coffin drops to the floor. Crowd is chanting along, and then goes for another coffin drop inside the ring, landing in a choke. And then Brody stands up, holding the choke into a gonzo bomb, and Brody King wins in 9 minutes and 35 seconds, getting 3 points.
You know, I found the finishes for the matches here pretty interesting, in that like a lot of them didn't necessarily build up in the way that you'd expect, I guess, modern wrestling matches too, like
all heel wins tonight as well.
Not really like a series of near falls and kickouts before building to that big climax. It's just like, you know, in the case of Claudio, it was like come in clothesline, and in this one it was a
gonzo bomb. So I mean, there was
but didn't really feel like a crescendo. And I wonder if that's just intentional. Like, does Tony want to maybe set a precedent to be able to say, hey, like these matches can end at any time, we're not necessarily sticking to like the sort of like format of an expected wrestling match? I don't know. I wonder. But heels getting, well, I guess Brody's not really a heel. We kind of had this debate.
I maintain the House of Black are not baby faces, but sure, we can split hairs.
In this closing scene, he was not.
So a good main event that these two had, to no surprise. And then at the end, Claudio was out there for the stare down with Brody King, and they announced these two will meet in their Gold League match next Wednesday.
Yeah, I think what's notable about this is, you know, we have Brody and Darby that at this point are very much rivals in this company, but it's Brody defending Darby, you know, so he is a babyface, John, at least.
I'll give you Brody. I'm not giving you Malachi Black nor Buddy Matthews at this point. Brody, I will accept. Yeah, and no overrun tonight, by the way.
Yeah, interesting.
So there you go. That was Dynamite. I thought there was some very good wrestling, but it was this is a weird show overall.
Crowd either felt like they were disinterested and hijacking because they were referencing the bald men in the match, or maybe not as loud. But is that because of the size of the crowd or in the building that they're in, or is it just maybe, I don't know, how excited they are for the matches? I don't know. But I will say, I think the tournament immediately adds a lot of relevance to every single match. Most of the matches, I should say, we see on the show. Same with the women, you know, that their little tournament is giving like reason for me to care about the matches. So the sort of like overall impact of the show feels like it was a worthwhile show to watch.
I thought Jericho and Ishii, like those two worked super hard in that match. I think it's the most you could expect out of those two that were kind of coming off. Like that match 2 years ago was a stellar one that they had, like both are 2 years older. And I just thought it was like, it was a tough crowd. I thought in particular for that one, as they're just destroying one another with all those chops and slaps and such. And I mean, those two, I think will be feeling that one tomorrow, especially Ishii.
Yeah. We pretty much heard from every program on this show that had a match at Full Gear. I would have loved to have seen Kyle Fletcher in arena, like just kind of do this big celebratory like promo, because that really, other than maybe AJ, was the big talk coming out of Full Gear. I mean, you know, just to kind of really cement Kyle Fletcher's status by having him do an in-person promo might have added a little bit, but his big role is on Saturday, I guess.
Yeah, I was glad they at least made mention of it, because to me that was maybe the most significant outcome of the show was, you know, Kyle Fletcher winning this huge match. I think everyone acknowledged was one of the best matches of the year, really.
Yeah. And let's not forget the big breakup we had between Mercedes and Camille.
I was going to end on that, because you leave the biggest impact for the end. See, Shut up!
If it was all a swerve, then that kind of excuses the bad acting, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. But there you have it. That was Dynamite from Chicago, and we will now open it up to feedback and your thoughts.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
We're going to start off with Christopher Tyler. Solid show and a follow-up from Full Gear. I feel the Continental Classic matches were solid. I do wonder, during the Jay White, Hangman, and Death Rider segment, where was Bullet Club Gold? I feel this will most likely lead to Jay White getting the title shot at World's End and maybe a three-way with Hangman. I don't think they add Darby into the mix, and having him in the Continental Classic is the perfect way to keep him busy. I'm sure you guys talked about Ricky Starks to open the show. So is it clear that it's all AEW talent that won't be working with GCW in the future? Is Bloodsport different, as MVP, Moxley, and Marino were all on the show after the comments from Effie were made? I mean, so first of all, as we played in the clip earlier, at least Brett Lauderdale, he hasn't heard about it affecting anyone else. Bloodsport, I mean, it's not like AEW talent has been all over these GCW shows. It just seems that Bloodsport has this unique carve out, whether that is through Josh Barnett or whatnot. I guess it remains to be seen. There's probably not going to be another Bloodsport event till WrestleMania, so we won't know that. I would venture to guess that I wouldn't be expecting any AEW talent on any other shows. It's not like this was a specific issue to Ricky Starks. This was an issue with GCW itself, and by association, Effie.
Yeah.
Like it really wouldn't make sense for other AEW talent to be okay and Ricky Starks isn't. Like, this was not an infraction by Ricky Starks that led to this.
Yeah, I think the Bloodsport question is interesting. We'll find that out in April. Something tells me I think a Marina Shafir will still be able to go do Bloodsport, just, you know, because I think it's a benefit to Marina Shafir. I wouldn't expect MVP. Whether or not there are discussions of other AEW talents that are supposed to do a Bloodsport in the future, I mean, I don't know. But I feel like Marino would get a pass. Moxley, maybe a maybe as well. But we'll find out. Hopefully things get patched up by then. Let's go to Brandon from New Jersey. Thank you, fellas, for letting me write in, because it's always times like these when the artists shine in dark times like these. I thought it was a solid outing for AEW tonight. A few things, though. One, what was Ricochet wearing? Like, why did he go back to bell bottoms like he is in Disco Stew? Bell bottoms, okay. Yeah, he just wants to change up the look. You know, everything old is new again.
Reinvention.
Yeah. Glad Brody King got the dub. Hope they do something with him, because his awoo seems over. Seems over like Rover. I didn't go out tonight because I'm washed, but today is the anniversary of my sister starting a line brawl at an establishment because another Sheila was trying to talk her to her husband. Myself and my brothers were shocked and hid under a table. My brother's wives got involved, and it turned into a Survivor Series match. Anywho, the law got called, and we managed to escape. Am I considered a fugitive? I'll hang up and listen.
I like how you misspelled fugitive. You would think that would be a word that Brandon would know inside and out by now. Yes, I would absolutely consider you such. And if I ever am near the authorities, I will point you out.
If not for that incident, then I'm sure for several others.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure Nick Comoroto has plenty of stories on Brandon from New Jersey. On to Andrew from Cape Breton. Best Dynamite in a while. The Continental Classic brings so much to television. The three tournament matches were great tonight. There was one point where Shelton Benjamin gave Mark Briscoe an insane German. The first German, I mean, he just launched this guy and he came on like right on that angle on his neck. Scared the cat and jumped out of my lap. Jericho also had his best match in a long time with Ishii. And while the crowd started out quiet for Hayter and Aminata, it really picked up at the end. I also feel old as I was watching Ricochet and Claudio when fans could chant hair at them. The only negative of the show was Adam Cole. While he looked much better without the Cheeto dust he put on himself in the past weeks, I hate that he's attached to Kyle O'Reilly in 2024. They first teamed in 2010 and for most of that time have been attached at the hip. It's not even a Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn feud. It's just Kyle is subservient to Cole. This on top of the angle falling flat. That being said, still one of the best Dynamites in recent memory. Okay, so a satisfied viewer is Andrew from Cape Breton.
I didn't even, so he's commenting on the tan. I did not notice the difference in Cheeto dust. But thank you for pointing that out. Let's go to Brian in New Jersey. Good show coming out of Full Gear. Like last year, the Continental Classic looks to provide more focused storytelling and more undercard matches with stakes, in addition to some great action like we saw tonight. Of the three tournament matches, I might give the edge to Claudio versus Ricochet. I love the tease for Claudio versus Brody to close the show. I also like the strong directions for the women between the Wrestle Dynasty tournament, Mae versus Shirakawa set for Winter is Coming in Heart Hurt Hunting Hayter. In case you guys didn't bring it up, did either of you catch the Continental Classic breakdown video hosted by Matt Camp? Nice to see him brought in, if only for this video.
I didn't see the video. I guess he did a kind of breakdown of the tournament. I don't know if you got to see it.
No, I did not. No.
All right. Well, it's on the AEW YouTube channel if you want to check that out. Cody from Maine is our last piece of feedback. Well-structured Dynamite, given that they had a lot to do with recapping the pay-per-view, continuing story beats, and establishing the tournament, and all within 2 hours, given there was no overrun, which made for a surprising finish in the main event, but thankfully, in a good way. It helps that we saw Brody and Darby recently, so it's tough to feel shortchanged by a sub-10-minute match. Speaking of Brody, it's a stacked roster, but he should absolutely be in the mix for a singles title. My biggest takeaway from night one of the tournament is the same takeaway that most people had from year one in the tournament. The promise of no interference, you will get a clean winner in 95% of the matches casts a somewhat negative light on AEW's usual booking. It was mentioned during your pay-per-view review, but we continue to see AEW referees look WCW levels of incompetent far too often because of the amount of interference. Looking at you, Rick Knox. And we've seen a lot more examples of them booking matches that they have to book themselves out of with a no contest or interference. Going with this rule set full-time, I think, would force them to be a bit more creative. For example, if Max Caster wrestles on Collision, it's okay that he loses clean because he's still feeling the effects of Swerve's beatdown. It would make stuff more impactful. I digress. Thank you for the review as always. Well, thank you, Cody.
It's an interesting idea in concept. It just hasn't been executed. Like, when was the last time we had a promotion with completely clean booking?
All Japan, 1990.
And it's just a different system, you know, like you,
it's like, fine. Like, it's not inherently a negative to have your occasional run in or something that has a purpose to it that is furthering something. Mm-hmm. I think where fans kind of groan is when it's just an out that it is not served for any function other than to not give you no winner, no loser. There's no harm, no foul it's just to get us out of a match. And that's the best we can do. And it just feels lazy.
Yeah.
And when it's a crutch, it becomes more of a problem because of the repetitive nature of it.
I guess I just like sympathize with the people that have to produce all of these hours of television while also building to big matches on pay-per-views, and also the need to promote big matches for all of the TV shows that you're trying to make as well. It's just a different system of pro wrestling that they have to produce versus maybe what ideally, you know, we wanted for a clean booking promotion.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say of like where something could, you know, if you really just decided, hey, we're just going to go in this route and we're going to
across the board, and we're going to teach our audience that we promote a big main event, you get a winner, you get a loser. And that was the case for a lot of the time with Dynamite. And I still think for the most part, I think you do have a confidence you are going to get that, but they've certainly gotten away from that. But like one of the appeals for me of just for instance, because we're talking about it, was like the Bloodsport show on Sunday. And it's like, I don't watch those matches and it's like, oh man, they really killed this guy or this. It's just, you know what you're getting. It's, you're going to invest yourself in a match. You get your winner, you get your loser. You have stories coming out of it. Now, could you do that multiple times per week? Probably not. But I think there's certainly something to be said with a lack of confidence in being able to take a winner and take a loser and book them accordingly coming out of something. Like, your matches of substance, I would say. It doesn't have to be top to bottom every TV show. But I think you do want your big matches, you reward people with, you know, a satisfying outcome unless there is an extenuating circumstance that pushes a story forward.
Should they do more time limit draws?
I think you could get away with them because typically whenever they do them, people get very excited when you get the 5-minute countdown, the 2-minute countdown, and those are generally exciting on TV and you can play with the time limit. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. The problem is like the time limit officially is what, like half an hour per match or something like that? 20 minutes at least?
20 or 30.
Most matches are not going 20 minutes on an AEW Dynamite. So they would have to significantly lower the time limit, but I wouldn't be opposed to that.
No, there's lots of ways you can be creative. I think you just want to be... Now is the time they do need to be taking risks because it's like time after time, and maybe I'm more critical of this than most. I fully admit maybe I am, but like to me, there is some disengagement with your crowds, and that to me is a consistent issue.
So what do you consider to be the risk?
If the argument is, let's just run with a pat hand, like we're going to do all of this stuff, it's not working in a grand scheme of things. So I'm more open to different ideas of how we're going to present our product, how we're going to present these matches. Do we want to try more clean finishes? Like, now is the time to take more of these risks because I do not want to see AEW run with this pat hand we are currently seeing. This is not the best version of this promotion. I don't think anyone's going to argue it is. And the numbers have reflected that. There is a change that needs to be instilled in this company that is loaded with talent. I do not look at that as the issue. But there is something in the presentation that is not clicking with your audience. And it's a small thing. But when you have like world-class wrestlers like Ricochet and Claudio, and this crowd is like, that was their engagement level tonight. I mean, I think it's a byproduct of something else, and I don't think I'm reading too much into that because it's a general malaise you get for a lot of these TV crowds, and then you peak them for the pay-per-views where these are blowaway shows that they do once per month.
I agree with all that. I just don't know if like changing the whether or not they have clean finishes will in any way.
I'm not saying that's the be all end all. It's more issues than that. And you do watch on TV now that I do feel they are trying different things. Like they are recognizing there are issues. I think any consumer can see that on the programming. What has an effect? Like we will see. There you go. There's our latest on the state of the world from John Pollock and waiting. We are out, but on Thursday, Rewind Away, number 170, dropping TNA Turning Point 2009. It will be available at postwrestlingcafe.com. Go listen to Turning Point and then check on chop-tees.com/postwrestling for your Black Friday sale. Nab yourself a wonderful varsity jacket. Get your post-wrestling hat. Maybe we'll get some post-wrestling fingerless gloves out in time for the spring. Lots of great ideas coming your way to the Chopped-Tees store.
Fingerless gloves, you say?
You know what we were offered? If we were to go to Australia for a Grand Slam, we have been offered horseback rides.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That sounds fun.
Yes. I got to see a young bird on a horse today.
Little
yes.
bird.
Yeah, little bird. Yeah, that is it.
Oh, adorable.
All right, that's it for us. We'll talk with you Thursday, and then Friday night we're back with Rewind to SmackDown and Saturday after Survivor Series. So if you're sick of us now, give yourselves a breather until 24 hours from now, and then we'll do it all again. Goodbye.